From this loop.
Yeah, that's quite nice. That's quite a good an opening gambit. I'm looking at him in my rear view mirror.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode all of the fives, 55 of Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and my good friend Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and
Mo Rich.
I am wrapped in rainbows at the mere thought of this week's guest.
Carry on.
Of course, this week we are joined by the lovely, handsome, and remarkable Luke Preble of Canterbury fame.
Yes.
Now touring, playing, and writing with Thomas Jenkins.
Tom Jenkins, lovely.
Friend of the podcast.
Fop.
And we're going to be getting into all sorts from his new album,
yes,
Misery and Comfort. And Luke's going to be talking all about everything Canterbury, from their breakup, their last ever tour,
the potential of other gigs.
Yes.
Ooh, I would like that.
And not only this, but 2019 actually marked the 10th year anniversary of their debut studio album, Thank You.
Awesome.
So he's going to be reminiscing
thank
about that.
Thank you to them.
Yes, massively.
Cheers,
thank
boys.
You.
Cheers, boys. If you haven't checked out Canterbury, I urge you to check out Canterbury immediately.
Yes.
Genuinely, in my eyes, one of the most underrated British rock bands of our time. I remember saying to them, we took them on tour with We Are The Ocean, I think, and we did, the Blackout did Camden Roundhouse. And I remember saying to Mike and Luke, please, please remember that we took you on tour when you're massive like Coldplay, because I was sure that they were going to be massive, and they deserve to be because they were brilliant songwriters, lovely chaps, as you find out. And
well, this is another guest we've wanted on the podcast for ages.
Yes,
Luke, just to come on here and talk about his newfound love for music, and he's going to be talking about what he's now up to,
yes,
outside of the Canterbury days and everything in between. As Sean said, a band that I feel we're really a band's band, really, in the music industry.
Yeah,
and that a lot of fans were really saddened that they ended when they did.
Well, me very much so, me included. Yeah, gutted when they did. Gutted they still are for now. For now? Is it for now? You'll have to listen to the rest of the episode to find out. Yes!
But as we did mention, he's now touring with Thomas Jenkins. We recorded this
I think he goes by Tom Jenkins. Think of the artwork.
Full title.
Yeah, but
he's Thomas Jenkins to
all
me.
Right, all right. Thomas Jones. Just checking. All right, yeah.
Well, Tom Jenkins then.
Well, yeah, that's his stage.
Okay.
You know.
Well, do you want me to do that again?
Well, no. We'll leave this bit in. Because it's funny.
But anyway, we recorded this backstage.
Yeah.
At Cardiff's Club Evo Bar.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Where did we record this?
We recorded it.
Same place we're recording this intro and outro right now.
In your car.
In my car.
Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, the Patreon is doing better than ever.
Yeah.
But we can still only afford to do it in my car when we've got time. Yeah!
I actually forgot about that then.
Yeah. But it was a good chat.
It was a very good chat, as you will now hear. But what I was going to mention is, you know that new album that Luke features on,
yes,
playing the bass,
yes,
on Misery and Comfort?
Yes.
People might want to go and check out that album, and they might also want to go and buy a copy,
oof,
of that record on CD or vinyl, because there's something very special on the artwork.
Is that the album he's brought out with you with the naked photos on the front?
No, that's the next one coming very soon that you weren't supposed to tell anyone about, Sean.
Oof, somebody wants to tell the police about it. Something disgusting.
Oh, God.
Spread eagle. Did you have to be spread eagle? Because Tom told me that, no wait, Tom told me he just asked you to do like a life drawing naked pose, and you said, Tom, I will only, do you know who the fuck, you said, do you know who the fuck I am? I'm one of the hosts of Sapling Podcast. If I want to be splayed apart on the cover of your album, I will be spread eagle. That's what I heard. Is that true?
I cannot confirm or deny those rumours.
Oh, we've got to wait for the next Tom Jenkins album. Shit. Carry on. Yeah, what were we saying?
Anyway, I'm just really excited for Luke to come on and talk Canterbury, Thomas Jenkins and everything else in between. If you haven't heard already, moving on from these allegations, if you love what we do and like us talking to your favourite bands, why not check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes.
You can get involved with our lovely community that has turned into a family. We're going to be doing a Christmas meetup very, very soon. So get all the details on that. Behind the scenes, memes, gossip, laughs, find your new best friend, and yeah, just...
Or a lover.
Or a lover, that too. It's a bit crazy. Patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes! Cool.
If you also like what we do...
Check us out on Twitter. I got this from you, bud.
Okay.
Oh, I'll take it from you. If you like what we do, or you don't like what we do, please let us know on Twitter or Instagram, at Sapnin Pod. That's at, you know, the A with a curl around it. SAPPENINPOD. That's SAPPENINPOD. That didn't go slower. I know that sounds like Morgan might have digitally altered that, but no, that was me just doing voice trickery.
You're good at that, aren't you?
Thanks.
So this is our first ever full episode of the podcast recorded in your car.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah, it is, it is.
But what a great podcast it is.
It is.
Should we get on with it?
We should.
Good. Here we go, Ed.
It's happening!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Yes! You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and Morgan Richards, my good friend Morgan Richards. This week's guest is the ever lovely, beautiful to look at, not bad on the old bass,
correct,
as good as singing as he is on the bass, beautiful Luke Prebble.
Yes!
Look at that for an intro.
Do I speak now?
Yeah.
I thought there was a chance where I get to do the Sapnin bit.
Oh, yeah, there is normally. Should we?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, we'll do that again. Sapnin!
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 Yay! Sorry, I was too eager to get into the chat.
He's so excited to have you on.
I thought I was witnessing the intro bit that you do on your own.
No.
Oh, fuck, they do that with the person.
No.
You talk for
it. Are we going to go? Yeah, we're going to go through all the stuff and the gigs they've been to.
Patreon.com/sapnin.
Checking out people.
But yes, our guest this week is Luke Prebble, who is currently on tour with
the elegant Welsh voice of an angel that is Thomas Jenkins.
Nice. I was going to say friend of the podcast.
All right. He's a friend of the podcast as well, but he does have the voice of an angel.
Yes. And Luke is currently on tour with Tom. And
what a pleasure it is.
And yes, you might also...
He's also the reason that I spend a lot of time in Wales at the moment.
Tom Jenkins?
So, yeah, yeah.
So he's
well, this band, the reason I'm on tour now and the reason we had to rehearse for tour, I guess, and spend all my time in Wales now. It's happening.
How are you finding it?
Which bit? The being in Wales all the time?
Being in Wales all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's... I'm living in the London at the moment.
Oh,
so,
London!
Coming up to... I left my band, didn't I? So, money bags.
We'll get to that.
It's fresh air. That's what it is. Up at Tom's Farm. Have you been up to the farm?
No.
Tom's Farm. It's just... people say, it's a breath of fresh air. It actually is.
Literally,
breaths of fresh air. Awesome. So
maybe that's where it comes from. Maybe fresh air comes from his farm.
He's not a sheep farmer.
When people say the Amazon is the lungs of the earth, that's bollocks. It's Tom's farm.
He exports fresh air. He doesn't have anything to do with lambs or sheep. He's not a shepherd. He's a fresh air exporter. Bloody good at it.
Oh, my God.
It's brilliant.
God.
I love this.
Yeah, no, it's gone.
Well,
it's
we should probably mention the fact that we're actually recording this in Sean's car.
Again. This has happened.
It's the first interview. Podcast is coming inside the car.
Feel quite comfortable now. I think if it was in some kind of like official place, it would feel a bit formal and I feel a bit weird about it.
Oh, nice. Okay,
I was saying to Sean earlier that I've had some good conversations in the back of a car in my years, you know. That's where stuff sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? Right. That's not really supposed to be like that, but like, you know, when you're growing up.
You know, yeah, we've all done it.
Doobie or something.
Yeah, so tonight is the Cardiff date of
the
tour.
Cardiff date.
I believe you did London yesterday.
We did London yesterday.
How was that?
London was great, yeah. London was, we did the Water Rats in King's Cross. It's kind of sketchy when we arrived. There was like 50 police cars like buzzing around King's Cross Station, helicopter in the air, ambulances and shit. We were like, oh, fuck. That was our escort in. It turned out later that somebody had just been casually stabbed in the tube station, so it wasn't like
as you do.
It was just normal London stuff.
Which is my least favourite way to be stabbed casually.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, because it's just a bit sort of claustrophobic, isn't it?
I'd rather aggressively.
Okay, fine. Yeah,
you could kind of see it coming, but casually stabbed is just. Da, da, da. Oh,
ah! Yeah, not expecting that.
Yeah, you don't wanna.
But we did London. It was cool. There was lots of people there from like years gone by. It felt like a kind of really nice reunion show.
Nice.
I mean, it's just a real pleasure playing with Tom. He's just a very talented man.
Yes.
Very lovely man. With Tom, you don't get that kind of like let's take ourselves really seriously thing. And it's purely for the love of music, which is exactly why I'm doing it, I suppose, and why I think he wanted me involved in the first place.
Fantastic voice as well.
He has a really lovely voice, and I'm just like kind of just straight up a fan as well. So it's every now and then I catch myself like gawping a little bit. I'm like, oh shit, no, wait, I'm supposed to be here on business. This is supposed to be doing something.
Yeah, we caught a bit of sound check earlier, and it sounds beautiful.
He's a talented man, that boy. So anyone listening here, this is the first opportunity we'll say to check out his new record, Misery and Comfort, which is on Spotify, I believe, but also available to buy on a vinyl or a CD. If you want to hear it,
get the CD,
hear it how it should be heard.
We get double thanks.
Yes, that's incredible. It's the first time my name has ever been inside of a CD.
Is it really?
It actually is.
Nice
moment. Yeah.
So this is actually quite a big day for you. Like you're keeping really it inside.
He does this all the time.
Yeah,
more,
really
right?
chuffed.
Yeah, I find out things after.
All right. Okay.
Like, he said to me one day, he was like, "Oh, is there any chance we could go and interview May Day Parade?" Right? And I was like, "What day is it?" And he was like, "Oh, so it's on a Sunday." And I was like, "Oh, I have some stuff planned." And he was like, "All right, never mind." And then it came closer to the day, and he was like, "You just look."
Oh yeah, one of my favourite bands of all time is Mayday Parade. Tell me that then.
We will go and meet these people, we will go and talk to these people. Amazing.
But he does that all the time.
That's
so
good. I mean, maybe this is the size of a cool, calm, collected journalist.
Oh,
you know?
thank you very much.
Perhaps that's what it is. And you know, if you let it all out that you're just like gushing, then no one's going
to
tell you.
Well, you know, I don't have to brag, but you know, show the
How many of you listeners are listening to this? I've got your name in a CD. Probably fucking none. Yeah, Morgan's better than you.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed that.
We should be proud, I say.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
It is, but that's nice.
Yeah. But going back to these shows, how has it been like for you to play on the road and stuff again? Because obviously you've had a couple of years out of the scene, out of the industry.
5 years. Yeah. Yes, it's amazing, actually. Like, I think from playing music, I'm going to say semi-professionally, there's all the elements of that that are a joy and that are a pleasure. Being in the studio, writing music, and performing music. The one bit that's been missing, I suppose, that is the performance of the music, because there's nothing stopping me sit down in my bedroom and write a song. There's nothing stopping me set up in a home studio or go record some stuff with some people. All that creativity can be exercised already, but the playing shows, you need that vehicle to do that, and that is now being fulfilled. It's kind of intense because now I'm 5 years older than I was, and like day one in, I was spewing.
Oh, wow.
like I'm nice. I got overexcited in Liverpool, and it was like, oh yeah. So maybe for like my alcoholism side, which I think that's the second time I've mentioned this now, it's just bad. For that part of it, probably not great, but no man, it's like it's a real pleasure.
Yeah, good.
And it's funny, like you kind of click back into muscle memory of like setting up all the gear and like all and where it was probably a chore by the end of things with the old band, it's now like, oh, I remember this bit, it's quite fun, and like plugging in all the shit and getting it all working. It's fun. Yeah, it's really great.
Has it made you miss the kind of the old days of Canterbury and doing this all the time, or is it kind of a feeling of just being able to enjoy it again this time a bit more?
Yeah, I mean, both of those things, I think. When the bits that I don't miss, I'm so glad aren't there. Like the pressure that you put on yourself and the desperation when you're looking at ticket sales, and Sean's nodding at me.
Yeah.
In sort of sad agreement. Yeah. Here, although, but no, that kind for. Of thing where it's your like your entire life, your entire existence relies on that being a success and all that stuff, it just isn't there for me. I mean, I hope it's not there too much for Tom, because also this for him, this project for him is like a really nice personal, I mean, he said on the podcast with you guys, I think, that he just wanted to get an album of solo stuff out. He just wanted to see it on a vinyl, and that was enough for him. So he's not like putting all this pressure on himself to like make it big and like hope the Spotify playlist come along and all this stuff. And that is like, it beats you up, that stuff. So not having that feels amazing. But yeah, I guess I do miss it to a point, because it's like being up on stage and playing a show, and when you're with your band and you're in the groove, there's not really much that feels like that. So it's great to have a little dose.
Yeah. Well,
you mentioned last night in London was the first time that all the Canterbury boys were back together in a room. How was that?
Yeah. No, it was great. Like we see each other all the time, kind of separately, but weirdly enough, we don't get together particularly often. Just all four of us. There we were. I wasn't really expecting everyone to be there, but then they were. I mean, Tom Jenkins is the catalyst, nice. The matchmaker.
What? Well, I guess people want to know, how did Canterbury come to an end and what?
Yeah, because it seemed like a really abrupt thing.
It did,
thing.
Probably, didn't it? Yeah. I think that's probably weirdly intentional. Thinking back on it now, I think about it a lot and I talk about it a lot, but it was like a pretty insane ride, the whole thing. When we started, like way, way back, like, you know, we did our first tours in like 2007, 2008. We were just like so excited and so ready to just be rock stars for the rest of our lives. Like, we recorded our first record, it sounded better than we were. which was the beginning of the end, probably, because we couldn't actually live up to what we'd recorded. But like the journey that we built from there for the next kind of, I suppose, not quite decade, well, no, about sort of 6 or 7 years, 3 albums, it was just a slog. Like there's no way of covering that up. Like it was an absolute joy. There was no reason why any of us would not want to do it. I mean, you'll know just as well as I will, maybe better than I will, how amazing it is to be in a band. You can't necessarily categorize it as a job because it's fuck all money, but as a thing to do and as a thing to spend your time focused on and doing, it is probably one of the best things you can do in the world. So it was such a joy, but it was a fucking effort. Like, and every time there's a decision to do a new album or to get into the studio or whatever, it's not just a light decision. That's like a lot of thinking about finances and thinking about how it's all going to work and thinking about whether we all have the time to give to it, etc. And I think it got to a point. I'm going to really try my best in this podcast to not sound like some kind of bitter failed musician.
Fire away.
But there's elements of the music industry which, even at our low level that we were at, are fucked. Like, there's people that are pretending to be there to literally support you through everything, to act as like a fifth or sixth member of your band or whatever it is. And it's bullshit. Like, it's absolute bullshit because they've got another 5 or 6 of those versions of, you know, it's like you're being cheated on.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, it's like a pimp with loads of...
Exactly. And it's like, which one's working? And you're obviously only ever the center of your own universe. Like, you want to be the one that that's getting the most focus. And, I mean, you know, it's easy to see now as I've grown up a bit that that's never going to be the case. You're never going to be number one on someone else's radar. Why would you be? But I think there was weird like pivotal moments throughout our musical career where we were like, fuck, just out of time or just out of luck. Weirdly enough, I wouldn't find myself talking about this normally, but the economic crash, which kind of fucked the major labels up, happened, I feel like, the day that we had a showcase in London. It was like, weirdly enough, at the War Rats, back in 2008, I think, or 2007. And we had like the entire industry there, and everyone came and was like, oh, you guys aren't as good as you are on record, which is fine. That's, you know, you'd have like, okay, well, maybe a development deal then, maybe something. And At the same time, everyone was like, fuck, we're losing our jobs and no one wants to sign anything that's not a sure thing and no one wants to take any risks on like homegrown music anymore. I say that flippantly, like there probably was people still doing that, but that kind of started off a real slog into a proper DIY way of life, which was cool. Like, we always kind of flew slightly under the mainstream, like slightly under the radar, kind of underdog feel, never quite fit into any one scene, but were adopted by a couple of scenes. And then throughout that, there was just certain people. I definitely should not mention any names until I've drank 2 more of these beers. But like, there was people that just kind of promised us everything and then didn't deliver. And we'd have been better off not getting them involved in the first place and sticking like super independent. Because when we were doing our best work and when we were at our best, we were in charge and we were the ones running the show. But it just got to a point where we were like, it just felt really natural to just call it a day and thought, we're growing up a little bit. There wasn't external pressure, you know, it's not like anyone's saying, oh, you guys need to grow up and quit the band. But we were like, we kind of want to like look at the future and not just be in this kind of sort of utopian mindset of like, it's all going to make it. We're going to make it eventually. We just need one more single and one more article and one more. Like, so I think we just all had a bit of a slap around the face and we were like, if we call it now, we won't get really fucked off at each other and someone won't quit. And we didn't really want to go out in like a...
That's a cool way.
Like a broken sort of like, oh, we actually don't get on anymore and it sucks. Like, let's go out technically top of our game, announce some shows, do it all on good terms, all on our terms. and then sold loads of fucking tickets when we hadn't sold any tickets before. And apparently there's 1,000 people in London that wanted to see us within a couple of weeks. So that's cool. I mean, I guess I can't answer the question straight up. This is what made us call it a day.
Yeah.
It was just you add enough pressure to something, something has to give, right?
Yeah.
But was it kind of something you could see happening for a while, or a split decision? Because, forgive me if this is wrong, but I think you released Dark Days in 2014 in January, and then announced the split and farewell tour in December. So that year, did you kind of know beforehand, or was it just everything developing from the back of that album that you all made that decision?
Also, wait a minute, before you answer that, I found a tweet or an Instagram post the other day that I wrote saying Canterbury have written, put out the best album of 2014.
Just thanks, mate.
What an album. What a fucking
thank you
album.
Very much. Yeah, we... I think it probably was. There was so much behind the scenes mess around the release of that record, and around the sort of... anyone external that was involved with that, like, kind of just didn't do their bit, really. And I think that it's a really weird, like, I guess Sean, you'll understand this, it's a really weird thing when you know you have like a piece of, and I'm not blowing my own horn here too much, but it's like it's a piece of art, right? Yeah. Like, you put fucking creativity into it, and you put effort in, and you put months worth of thinking and like emotion into this thing, and I guess in that instance you're not expecting anyone to love it, and that's not your first thought, but you're thinking like, okay, well, we've got to give it the best shot because that's what we're doing here, that's what when we know that we have an audience that wants to hear this stuff. And I just feel like we were just, it was like, you know when you walk behind your mate and you like kick his feet, like, so he trips up on himself. Yeah. It felt like that's what was going on for the people that were dealing with us. I'm sure they have a rebuttal to that, and they could be like, no, you little sport brats, you just wanted it all. But it just felt like we just didn't have that platform. And when you create something like that, and you're just like so excited, and you're shitting your pants, and you're just like, oh my God, all of the things in one, heading towards this kind of date that someone else has set for you, and you get all this collateral around it, and all that starts fucking up and falling away, and oh sorry, and no, it wasn't this, and there wasn't that feeling of excitedness and shitting your pants, combined with that feeling of deflation when something doesn't come through, not because you're entitled and expecting it, but just because you want it so bad.
Sometimes you were promised it, like a lot of like people tell you the
exactly.
Yeah, you're
it's a sure
this,
thing. It's
when
a sure
it doesn't
thing.
Come.
It's just what? Such a like. It's literally just a pop balloon.
Yeah.
And I think that probably when did we release Dark Days? January
2014, I believe.
That when that came out, we probably knew, we were like, well, if the momentum wasn't there, if we didn't have that bigger kind of like, bam, there it is, either first single or whatever it was, second single or whatever goes on, BBC Radio 1, don't really like this one. It's like, fine, well, try something else. We don't really care about BBC Radio 1. That's fine. That's one avenue. Look at all the media out there. Like, come on, let's push it. People are kind of stuck in their traditional ways, and it was a bit like, right, well, these are the guys we're dealing with here, so, like, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, and we can't now, like, once that sort of opportunity for climax kind of like bam there it is has kind of gone, your thought just goes to, well, we need another record now.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, like, we can't sort of reshop that one and like have another go, so you just kind of wig out a bit. And I think we probably made the decision shortly after that.
Okay.
That release, maybe in our own minds individually and then together in a room later on that year.
Yeah.
I remember vividly though typing out the message to post out to people.
Oh.
I really remember it, like, just typing away, but feeling quite sort of proud about it and quite excited to do
good.
It yeah,
because I was completely the other way.
Oh, fuck,
like, I knew.
Yeah, I know,
because I was the only one who didn't want it.
Oh,
like, I was
fuck.
Like, fucking no, we can carry on, let's be a pub band forever.
Yeah,
I don't give a fuck if I'm 89 and I'm still singing Children of the Night. Fucking let me do it, this is what I meant to do. And then it happened, and like December the 1st we announced.
Yeah.
And I think it was such a sad day because we'd announced, but then at the time I was very big into wrestling at the time, and there was a wrestler called Wade Barrett, whose gimmick was Bad News Barrett, right? So he'd go, I'm afraid I've got some bad news. Right. And then he'd go, WWE is cancelled or right, whatever, yeah, right? Yeah. So that day I tweeted, oh, I should have got Wade Barrett to really.
That would have been good, yeah.
But then he did. Blackout fans, I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Off his own back.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
So yeah, that was the only thing that day that cheated. Like, otherwise, I'd have been like, oh, my buns.
Yeah,
my
well, you've got to take it where you can get
nobody
it.
Nobody could. And then, I'm afraid I got some bad news. I was like, yeah!
Finally!
But also,
fuck, that bad news really sucks.
It was just... So it's nice to hear that you had that kind of more powerful moment
it was just genuinely an overwhelming sense of pride when we did it. We were like, fuck, nice. Like if we just like just put a full stop at the end of it now, we're the last show we play is the biggest show we'll play, and that's a good place to go out. And we just wanted to burn out rather than fade out, I guess. That's
a good way to look at it and to hear, because I think the last thing anyone wants is for like a band they love to,
of course,
just hate each other and fall apart in that way. But reflecting on those last shows for you, was that just a perfect ending to the band?
Yeah, for sure. There's loads of nuances in my mind that it's just like, oh well, this and that and that. But yeah, it was a perfect ending. We did three shows, Birmingham, Manchester, London. And it was the first time, because we sold them out in like the click of a finger, and we were like, we'll get a tour bus. It's the only time we've ever been on a tour bus.
Nice.
Because
we did that for our last tour.
Yeah.
Like, fuck it, one more.
Yeah, but
you guys
have been on tour buses before. We had been like the Splitter Generation, and before that, like the fucking LDV Convoy, which unfortunately I crashed at one point. So that was no more. But the tour bus thing was like, weirdly, when you're even younger than even in a band, you don't have a name for your band, but you're kind of jamming out in like school music practice rooms and that. The thing you want is a tour bus.
Oh, yeah.
You're not bothered about. You don't even know how the industry works. You don't have a clue.
I didn't
even
know what the inside of one of them looked like. Right. But I knew I wanted one.
But what you do is you queue up outside of shows at like the London Astoria when you're growing up as a kid with your 20 quid in your sock to see Newfound Glory to buy a T-shirt, and the tour bus is there. You're like, that's what I'm going for. Yeah. So those kind of little tick boxes, we were like, we've got three shows left, we better do it.
Nice.
And it was mad though, like, because you're sitting in there, it's all a bit overwhelming. Quite literally, like that, in the true sense of the word, like overwhelming. You're just like, I just can't even comprehend any of this now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the perfect ending, I would say.
Nice.
On the whole.
Good. What did everybody end up doing after the band? What did everybody do individually?
Well,
because that seems to be a thing.
It's a good question. Yeah, there's definitely still music in everybody's lives. I got a job, actually, which I fucking love, to be honest with you. I got a job. I work for an advertising agency in the HR team.
Cool.
Like in the people department, and I basically just get to spend my day working with like 250 super creative, super like motivated, energized people that love what they do.
Awesome.
And I get to support them through their careers and support them through their like emotional challenges. And like, I feel like I've done like a psychology degree by just working at this company. I still work there, been there like 5 years now. And I kind of blew my own mind by being like, oh shit, turns out I wasn't just destined to be a rock star. It turns out this desk job is actually pretty sick, and there's a lot to be had. And weirdly, like quite a positive spin is like, I realize when I'm spending my entire day working, right, like office job, I say office job, it's a fucking advertising agency, so it's mad as fuck, like it's absolutely outrageous, but there's so many hours in the day to be stimulating your mind and to be able to like be offering people stuff and like be able to stuff to give, and then you realize in a band I was spending like 5, 6, or 7 of the hours in the day sat in the back of a van smoking weed and actually not offering the world anything in that time. I kind of in hindsight, actually, if there's any like younger bands like listening or people that want to be musicians, one of my bits of advice would be like, during that time, in those downtimes when you're sat around a dressing room doing fuck all, pick your guitar back up or like have another creative output, that time is so dead. Like, it's just dead, wasted time. You don't feel like it is, because you're like, well, we've got the show later, we've got the thing that people have paid to come and see. But it is, you're numbing your brain. And I kind of, one of my only sort of regrets in Canterbury was like all of those hours where you think you're just doing nothing, or you think you're
doing something,
doing nothing for something. Mm. It's for nothing. So like, make the most of it.
Nice.
But now I'm like spending hours all day long, like really stimulated in the brain, really learning stuff, and like I'm chuffed with how things have turned out for me. The other lads, like, I mean, yeah, jobs here and there, like, I can't speak for them in terms of how much they love their day job, but I've written music with like both of them on separate occasions and like played around. James is doing loads of recording stuff, Mike's doing loads of recording stuff. It's cool.
Cool. Nice. That's the thing, it's like when I was in the band and the band was doing well, like I never saw getting a normal job as like giving in, because I guess some people do see that. But yeah, they're like, I guess kids see the like being in a band as being like, yes, that's the job I want. And then sometimes you get in and you're like, yeah, but you could be making more money just literally doing the office job, even though
money aside, it's like being in a band is cool because of the, you are inherently creative and you get to do your creative job every day, right? Yeah. Like, you get to have your outlet and your kind of, the energies that you get the biggest buzz from, you get to do them every day. Yeah. And that's a real special thing. Like, that doesn't, but similarly, like, sometimes only for 15 minutes if you're a support band on a tour. Of course, touring is amazing because you're also adding in, like, you're traveling and you're seeing the world and you're hanging out with your friends and whatever, and you're partying, and like all that stuff is quite wholesome and fulfilling. But the actual creative output part, the part that is technically, if you're thinking about money, the part that's actually making you money is a very small part of that day.
Yeah.
Whereas if you find yourself a job that, again, not really thinking about money, but that's paying you the same or a bit more, but you're actually doing it for more of the day, that can be far more fulfilling.
Yeah, like, more rewarding.
Yeah, way more rewarding. And that's what I found. I mean, that won't be the same for everyone. I definitely am really lucky in that sense. I know we're not here to talk about my job in HR because it's boring as fuck to everyone listening, but sometimes meet people and I'm talking about my job and they're like, fuck, you really like your job, don't you? I'm like, yeah, I'm really one of those rare people that's lucky, you don't realize
how good that is.
Right.
Like, obviously I know people who have left bands now who are just in jobs who hate every moment of it.
Oh, it sucks. That's so sad. And honestly, from more of like a career counsellor point of view, which is kind of what I do, it doesn't have to be like that.
No.
Like, it honestly doesn't. There is something out there that will be, and there's loads of stuff you can do to try and work out what that might be and work out what it is that makes you tick, what it is that gets you motivated, what are your satisfiers in life, what are your dissatisfiers in life. Spend some fucking time working on that shit, self-awareness, self-development, and you will find the right bits of the puzzle. That's what's going to happen.
Nice. I like that.
That's absolutely fantastic to hear.
Yeah, no, it's wicked.
Awesome.
But going back to some of the other good times of Canterbury.
The good times. I'm looking for my beers. This is so embarrassing.
Can't lose the beers.
They've gone all
the way. What did I do? No, I've had two.
There they are.
Under your cap.
Sorry.
We'll just remind everyone that we're in a car.
Yeah, we are in a car, and they were under a Pizza Planet hat
from Toy Story.
From Toy Story.
And yeah, for anybody who thinks I've got a child, I don't have a child. So
it's
why
me.
Is that
it's
Toy
me.
Story hat in my car?
Well, the child is me, but
it's you.
Anyway.
So I'm just opening up a Pump Up the Jam. Jam Donut Pale Ale. Sean Smith's recommendation.
Over to Luke Pebbles. Pale Ale reviews. Go on then, have a sip.
Okay,
ASMR.
Gonna love this.
Yeah, it's like strawberry laces.
Nice. Strawberry bad. I can't tell from your face. You can't see this because on a podcast. He's pulling his face.
Nice as the... Nice for the first sip. I'll let you know
cool.
How it goes down.
But going back to some of the happy days, as I was trying to get at, it's actually the 10th year anniversary of Canterbury's debut album, Thank You.
Is it now?
It is, yes.
What was that? It would have been October.
It was November.
I think the official date was November. We were on tour with Billy Talent when we released that.
Nice.
And yeah, sorry, no, carry on.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say that. How does it feel looking back on that now, especially being a debut record? I'm sure it must have just.
Where
been
were you with Billy Talent when it came out?
Feels, it makes me feel really old.
Yeah,
I think we were in Manchester Academy. It was the Academy, not the Apollo. And it would have been a bit weird with that record because, like I mentioned earlier, there was we had recorded that record in like 2007. And it was better than we were. So we took a couple of years of playing as many shows as we could prior to releasing it so that we could be taken a bit more seriously when it did come out. But we were getting so bored of waiting around for, oh, I think this label's going to sign you, and I think this major's really sniffing around. It's so exciting, and let's go for dinner with these people, and let's go for drinks with these people, and all of that fucking shit that goes on that any trying musician will tell you about.
Yeah.
That we were like, well, all this streaming stuff's happening and all this, like, the industry's clearly changing and everyone's absorbing music anyway. In fact, consumption of music is at all-time high, sales are at an all-time low. Like, let's just leak our own album. Like, let's just put it on the internet for free download. And that's exactly what we did. So it was, I think it was kind of, well, I don't want to say one of the first, but we like to deliberately say it's free, here it is. We had 10,000 downloads in like 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Which nice. We would not have got in sales.
That's crazy, isn't it?
So, and you know, that then probably turned into like merch sales or ticket sales or people at least getting an interest, and it kind of got the presses pricked up and stuff, and the record sounded good. So we were like confident in the product, I guess. But I think we released it officially because we did do a hard copy of it.
Okay.
I think that might have been in November, but I think we pushed go on the leak or the like official. Oh. We leaked it ourselves on something like the 27th of October or something around 5 p.m. on the
straight on to Napster or Kazaa or LimeWire.
Yeah, but we didn't even need to do that because it's like we wanted people to download it from our site because then we get an email address. It was like bring them to us. You can share it, sure, but like, this link, I feel really bad now because I can't remember the name of the company we did it through. There was like somebody that was kind of like, yeah, we can do that for you, like technologically, mechanically wise. That's we can swap an email address for this. And then we just had all these like essentially just a mailing list. Then we realized how much it was to fucking send a mail shot out. We're like, we've got 10,000 email addresses. They'll be like, yeah, pound a piece. It's like, what? Ooh. I mean, it wasn't that much.
Oh,
but
I was going to say,
it's crazy.
I don't think it was that much, but it was like, it's all very well and good having the email addresses. But yeah, man, that was 10 years. Makes me feel quite old.
Yeah, sorry.
But it does also feel that long ago. Like it was
a whole decade.
Fucking ages ago. Also, I cringe slightly when I listen to that record. but that's just because that's child me singing on it.
I had a first with Billy Talent as well. Like your debut album came out when you were with them. We had our first ever Kerrang cover, and we were with them in Paris, and we were looking at a rider which was 6 beers and 7 waters, and we were like, hey, cover of Kerrang, boys, hey, we made it, here we are, support. And then Billy Talent brought in a massive pizza and we're like, congratulations on the cover. And we were
amazing.
Like,
yeah,
didn't even know you knew, but you're Canadian, so of course you're nice.
Those guys were so great.
Lovely.
We didn't know what the fuck we were doing back in 2008 when we toured with them. We were used to like Railway in Winchester, Chinham Village Hall. Like, I guess we'd started working at like the toilet circuit, a bit of Barfly here and there, but could not believe it. Day one on the fucking tour with Billy Talent, it was catering, like fully catered. We were like, how much?
Yeah. Like, can I have a jerk potato? How much for the cheese?
Yeah.
You can have whatever you want. But whatever the fuck I want.
Couldn't believe it. I also got kicked out of the venue first night. I was sucked. That story, it's quite weird actually. Where were we? Nottingham, maybe? Shit. Can't remember where we were. First night of the tour, we play the show, buzzing our tits off, just so excited, big room. No one really gave a fuck, but we were fine with that. We were like, this is so exciting, can't believe we're here. We'd obviously had like 10,000 flyers printed for the gig. Management like, make sure I get your flyering done. Like, yeah, no worries, we'll do that. And I think we, after we played, we just all had like pockets full of these things. So we were just going around, like buzzing around, like literally kids. And we were up on the balcony, and there was a show stop during Billy Talent's set. Someone broke their leg in the middle of the pit.
Ooh.
And we were like, oh, fuck. But we were watching down from this balcony, like still kind of excited and like, oh, wow, what's going to happen? So the whole crowd like moves apart, and there's like security guards there and stuff. And I'm going to throw him under the bus here. James says to me, he's like, oh, mate, just chuck loads of flyers just off the balcony, like into the crowd. And then everyone will be like, oh, wow, yeah, cool. That's that band that opened. So I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. Just chuck this like sort of huge, like fountain of fucking flyers down. Because at the time we were just promoting our free album. So we were like, just click here, whatever. It was worth doing. And like the security guard looked up and like pointed and was like, what the fuck are you doing? We kind of like scarper back to our dressing room. Fucking security guard finds me, and he comes into the dressing room, and he's like, right, who was it? Who threw the flyers? And I was like, oh, he was like, you're all going to be kicked out. I was like, okay, it's me. Like, I'll whatever. So he was like, you leave the venue. And I was like, okay. Said to my brother Nick, who's our tour manager, I was like, oh, okay, give me the keys. I'll just go sit in the van. It's cool. My mistake. I'll take a couple of beers. It'll be fine. Fucking turns out later on, like, the Billy Talent's tour manager had like come into the room and been like, I heard about this, what had gone on. To be honest, when I found out, I wanted to kick you off the tour. You don't behave like that. I think the story had got back that I threw the flyers at the guy with the broken leg.
Oh, no.
And it's like,
With a broken leg?
Yeah.
I've one of these.
Yeah, I've got a pocket full of heavy fucking A5 flyers. Take that.
And, I'll get it. No.
I was just trying to promote my band, mate. Yeah. Like, I didn't want to do it. But yeah, nearly got kicked off the tour and got kicked out of the venue first night of my first real tour.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you...
Sorry, Billy Talent.
Who were you surprised most by that you met? Was there anybody who was, in a huge band who was lovely, or anybody who was in a huge band who was a dick, or a small band who was a dick, or...
We never really played with, like, massive bands, to be honest. I mean, the biggest shows we ever played with were You, Me at Six, and those guys are just fucking sound.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if
anybody... Did anybody at the Kerrang Awards or...
We never went.
Didn't
we? No, we see, this is the thing, we always were just kind of slightly off the scene, like we just weren't quite involved.
I don't get that.
Mad.
It was because we
a lot of bands loved you as well,
which was amazing. And we were a band's band, and we were very grateful for that. And it seemed to, the UK rock scene was the one that kind of adopted us, and that's the shows that we ended up playing. But we just never quite, you know, we'd have a Kerrang review, but it would be like a tiny little column.
Yeah.
We might get a couple of articles written about us every now and then, but we were just always just slightly underdog, which can work in your favour. It meant that the build was way more organic, and it meant that things, you know, the tours that we got on, you know, like Def Havana with you guys, with You Me at Six, like some of the bigger tours we did were for our own merit. Mm. It wasn't because of some buzz or some hype or whatever. It was because somebody in that band liked our record, which is sick. Like, that's exactly how it should work. But yeah, never really met, I don't think so. Oh, actually, I say that, I didn't meet him, but Robert Plant was at a gig once.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, because we did a tour, us, the Hot Melts, and Sons of Albion. There's another band on there. It sounds terrible. Fuck, I'm going to get in trouble. No, it doesn't actually matter. I don't care. I have a job now. I'm sorry, whoever that was, that was on the other, that was on the tour. But Sons of Albion, fucking cool band. The singer was Logan Plant.
Oh, nice.
Who is Robert Plant's son, who now owns Beaver Town Brewery. You know the...
Does he?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, interesting. Yeah, he's fine.
he's done all right.
Yeah, he's fine. His dad's Robert Plant. But we were doing the Birmingham Bar Academy. You remember up the stairs? And somebody was just like, dude at the back there in the shadows, Robert Plant.
Bobby Plant one?
It's like, fuck off. Nice. I mean, I wouldn't even know what's... I mean... Yeah, so I didn't meet him, but yeah, he was nice.
Oh,
I remember saying to you guys when we did that tour together, when we did the Roundhouse as the headline thing.
Yep.
I remember saying to Mike, in particularly, when you guys are bigger than us, please. please take us on tour. Because I was fucking convinced. I'm sure there's tweets out there that I said Canterbury are going to be the next Coldplay. You motherfuckers.
Well, that's... thanks, mate.
By that, I thought you were going to marry Gwyneth Paltrow.
And have a son called Apple.
How different fruit does children...
Is it a son called Apple or a daughter called
Apple? Son, I think.
Well, that's obviously very nice of you to say. Okay. But I guess for every Coldplay, there's like 5,000 Canterburys.
Not true.
No.
The thing is, people are going to go back. They're going to listen to this episode, then go back and be like, "What the fuck? How did I miss?" Because we've had it. We've had it with other people as well. We've had people go. Tom Jenkins. A lot of people, you know, outside of Wales.
Yeah.
Might not have heard of Tom, and then they've listened back to his stuff and gone, "Whoa, that's fucking unbelievable." I think that's going to happen.
Mate, we had. The last couple of singles that Straight Lines released before they were like drop it and go. Yeah. They didn't even like try and push these singles. They just had a couple of tunes. We were listening to them in the van the other day. Fuck me, that's powerful shit. Like the fucking lyric, it's just like heavy stuff. That's why it's amazing to see Tom doing what he's doing now because it's so stripped back. But it was like fucking awesome. Like really, really good stuff.
But going back to what Sean was saying, one thing I did want to mention is that we've had so many people since starting the podcast wanting to hear stories from Canterbury, and so many bands mentioning that they never understood why Canterbury didn't see the heights maybe they thought you should have deserved it. Looking at all that, for you, is it just great in a sense to have that kind of...
Can't be. No. You can't... If someone's telling you...
You never let me be nice on these, do you?
No, but it's not that. It's just I know what that feeling's like. That's why I, like...
Okay, but...
No, it is. I mean, yes, I see what you mean.
It's nice.
From both sides. It's also, like, it's bittersweet, isn't it? That's a bit like this IPA, actually.
We call it back around.
Yeah, we go back around.
Strawberry review.
But it's... you get a buzz from someone telling you you're fucking shit hot, right? Like that's like somebody's just saying like, oh, it's when someone goes on, it's like, oh, it's criminal that you weren't. It's like, well, yeah, all right, man, that is what it is though. Like that's how it played out. I also, that brings me around to the thought of like, it's not really about how good your fucking songs are, because there are so many bands that have just been fucking amazing, like really brilliant, brilliant bands where you just think that song is a banger. And for whatever reason, the cocktail of ingredients, like...
It can be as something as stupid as the band's manager doesn't get on with somebody else, or the band's booking agent isn't friendly to somebody else.
Because it's such a people-led industry rather than like a talent-led industry, you know? Like, it's all relationships. So by nature of that, it's humanly complex. There is no... saying whether anything's a sure thing or not. So I love it. I love to hear that someone has the opinion that they thought we should have been bigger than we are. Like, that's cool. It's like, nice one. But because that means that they're into it. So on a personal level, it's like, that's awesome. But it's just the way it went. Like, there's not really anything, you know, no one move at any point was the reason it didn't connect. And I don't even really know how to define what this kind of like higher level that people were expecting is, you know. It's like, what, fucking Wembley Stadium? Like, I don't even know. Like, I wanted to do Astoria so bad, and they shut that down before we were even a band. So it's like Brixton Academy, I guess, but we played a support show there, so it's kind of ticked off. I don't know, man. To make it a viable career, I guess, to be able to have, like, for it to be your actual day job. I always consider Canterbury as having been semi-pro. I guess to take it pro would have been the idea, where it's just like, that is what you do. But yeah, man, it's a bittersweet thing to hear.
I was just trying to get out to having that kind of, still having that connection with people after all these years, but still in some form, just be nice to know people did care and still do.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's really amazing. And that's the fucking beautiful thing about music, because it just transcends like trends or whatever. Like if a piece of music, and especially nowadays when it's just, it will last forever in a digital medium, it will never go away, so people can enjoy that forever. And when you hear about someone that's enjoyed it, it's just like, that's really awesome. It's better than a fucking like on Instagram anyway.
100% 100%. Is there ever any likelihood of there being any Canterbury gigs?
See, I want to say no as the answer.
Yeah.
But I think I'm too open-minded and curious as a person to just stick by that as the answer. Like me, Mike and James especially, because obviously Scott left the band, we had Valley drumming for us for a bit, so that piece of the puzzle maybe not so clear, but the three of us are still such like brother mates for life. It gets mentioned every now and then when we get pissed up. I think musically there's some other exercises that we want to take first, and I don't, maybe not from my point of view, like I say doing this stuff with Tom is amazing, that's kind of exercise, that stuff. The other guys have like maybe solo stuff, maybe not solo stuff, but that they want to just get out their system, I think, which I absolutely respect, and that's fucking awesome and I want to hear it. But yeah, maybe. That's the good thing about having gone out on our own terms. Like, yeah. We, you know, it would be really lame to say we're coming back for a show and then it should be like tumbleweed. You know what I mean?
I do not think it would.
Well, it's hard to know because it's been a while.
We're kind of in the nostalgia-y around again cycle. It's like, you know, obviously I see people saying, "Oh, I've got to bring them back together," and you know, because a lot of Mike M. You know,
yeah, everyone is getting back together and doing things.
And I, yeah, please do not rule out the Canterbury one.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't rule it out. The thing is, I think when we have talked about it, and whether we've just been pissed up or whatever it is, it's not been like, oh, let's just do a show for the sake of doing a show because we miss it. And that'd be a bit of a selfish reason to do it. It would be around a song or a record or like something creative, something musical that we're like, oh, well, we now have this that's floated to the top and that's the people I want to do it with. And
yeah,
oh, look, it just so happens that it's Canterbury. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't. The others, if they listen to this, will be like, shut the fuck up, dude. It's a no, all right? It's an outright no. But I don't want to just say that as if it's Carl Forever.
That's cool.
Okay.
Mm. No, but that does give me some...
I don't think we'll ever be a band again.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that will ever be like our thing and that we spend our entire time doing. But
it's kind of like what Chris from Funeral for a Friend told us back a couple of weeks ago. He was saying that like if Funeral for a Friend did any more shows, it would just be, I guess, festival sets. They're not looking to write a new album.
Yeah, I think ours would be kind of the opposite. I'd want it to be around something.
Yeah.
Every now and then I'll be like noodling around and singing a melody or whatever, and I'll be like, that would have been on a Canterbury album.
I've done that myself.
So, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Oh, wouldn't this
That's
be
the next Black Hawk? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No. Bastard.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna... It's a no, officially.
Yeah.
But it's not really a no.
The words of Justin Bieber.
Because you can't.
Never say never.
Right, that's exactly who I was thinking of as I was saying that.
Canterbury's biggest influence, Justin Bieber. But yeah,
but coming cool. back full circle now with these shows of Tom.
Yeah, man.
How did the call first happen for you to do stuff with him? Cause
good question.
Was it just another drinking idea or something?
No, I mean, me and Tom have been mates for a long time. We were big Straight Line fans. He came on tour with us just as a roadie a couple of times. We did a headline tour and he just came out acoustic because we just wanted him there, like, because he's a fucking laugh. And he just released that acoustic record, that Continental Keys, do you remember? And we were like, oh, let's get him opening every night. So he was kind of part opening, part kind of drunken harlequin, part kind of just best mate on the road. And then he was like, oh, I'll come out with you guys, because we did European tour with Kids in Glass Houses as well. And he was like, I'll just come out. I don't need to open. I know those guys, so let's just party. So I've been like really good mates with him for a long time. Seen him in the last years since. But I just got a phone call from him like back in, when we would have been like early 2018, last year. Just like, oh, well, I've got these songs now, I'm going to send some to you, do you want to play bass? Like, it'd be fun. I was like, mate, I don't really like I'm just not really a bass player. Like, play the bass because our bassist left. Picked up the bass and like I play the bass like I play the guitar. It's like, and I've got no musical training. I was blabbering on like this, and he's like, "Shut the fuck up and just like let's just get in the room." I was like, "Fine, let's do it." Had like a pre-production session. He sent me a few songs. I was like, "This is sick." And then he came down to London with Elijah, who produced Tom's record.
Yeah.
Guy from Texas, who's been friends with Tom for years as well. And they came down to just kind of do this pre-production. I was kind of like shitting my pants. I was like, "Fuck, I barely know how to play anyway. Like, I haven't picked up the bass in years." And we just jammed it out and like kind of helping like sculpt some of the tunes and doing some of the arrangement. And he just throws out there, he was like, "Oh, I'm thinking of doing the record in Texas with Elijah." And I'm like, "Oh, cool, man. Yeah, that's going to be wicked." Like, just not even thinking for a minute that I'm going to be involved with that part of it. Came up to the farm, came up to Wales a few times, doing some rehearsals with the other guys, Lau and Danny, from band Cuba.
Yeah.
And we just all, like, as a group of four, we just got on really well, just, like, really good gelling. The songs are already written and fucking banging, so it wasn't, like, a hard task. There was no kind of, like, effort that we needed to put in apart from just, like, getting it right and like, doing right by Tom. He's the boss. But then, I remember he was just like, "Oh," he called me up. He was like, "Oh, mate, yeah, thinking of going to Texas, maybe like November." It's like, "Nice. Oh, yeah, good man.
Subtle
good,
Welsh, good, I good like
man.
It.
Yeah, well, you know, he's not got the thickest accent, has he?" But, and he's like, "Yeah, thinking of going to Texas. You free on these days?" I was like, "Oh, mate, you can play these bass lines with your eyes closed. Like, there's you don't, like, don't fork out for me to come to play Texas." "Oh, fucking life's too short, but fucking you're coming to Texas." I was like,
"Yeah,
amazing." Nice. So we spent 2 weeks drunk in Texas.
Nice.
And somehow came out with this amazing record. And now we're taking it on the road. I mean, yeah. it's like a... It's a really strange full circle. Like, yeah. It's a really weird... Because through all of this, I wasn't like, "Music's got to be my thing." Like, I've not been fighting for that to be the case. You know, I have... You know, I've got my job. There's all this stuff going on in my life, which is, like, completely external. But the power of just connection with a person brings you to want to create together. And then that's what's come from it. So... guess, yeah, it's still all a bit of a head fuck, to be honest.
It's awesome though.
But it's fucking awesome, and
glad to see everybody involved in that project doing something.
Yeah, enjoying it and having a laugh and just getting out there and
such a great playing laugh
to people.
Yeah, and Tom just he's like tour dad, tour manager, the talent, you know.
He's one of the most unintentionally funny people I've ever met. Sometimes I find myself just laughing at him. I'm like, "Oh, he didn't mean to be funny then, and I feel bad." I'm like, "Ah, oh, he didn't mean..." Oh.
He's also one of the hardest working, because I don't know any other farmers personally, but I've never known anyone to... Like, it's dusk till dawn. No, other way around. Dawn till dusk. Yep. Dusk till dawn's the zombies.
Yeah.
Dawn.
That's the
dawn
thing that inspired
dusk.
All those twats to get all that tribal tattoo up their arm and up their neck from dusk till dawn.
Sick.
That was the first movie where...
That's why I've got it as well.
Yeah.
Those tats.
The George Clooney look.
I'm staying up at his at the bungalow up on the farm, and he's like... You hear the door go at like fucking 5 o'clock in the morning, and he's out feeding the cows and doing this and building fences, and like then we'll go rehearse and then we'll go practice, and then he'll go back and he has to fucking grind the barley and do all this. I'm like,
shear a sheep.
It's unbelievable. Like, he just and then he's like farm fit as well, so like he entered like a half marathon the other day and did it in like fucking an hour or something. It's like, "Oh, I didn't even know."
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Just love the eyes on the... "I was just thinking about catching a sheep." I was. I just thought to myself, "There's a sheep out there. I got to catch him." Next minute, I've done half marathon.
Literally. I went out with him when the first times I came up on the quad bike out shepherding. And it's unbelievable. He's going to be listening to this like, "What the fuck, Luke? Why are you telling these stories? This is my normal day job." But it's like...
No, but this is the thing. It's like, to me, that's super fucking cool, right?
Yeah.
And then there's kids who listen to this who will go, "That's super fucking cool," who have come to listen for rock and roll stories, who will now hear that and be like, "That's fucking cool," because that is fucking cool.
Yeah,
so cool. We had to drive around these acres and acres of land on this quad bike as the sun's coming up. And he was like, just keep your eye out for a sheep with like blue spray paint on it. And I'm like, all right, man. And then obviously I don't fucking see it, but he does. He's like, oh, there it is. And we're like, great. He's like, turn off the engine, stay here. I'm going to go shepherd it into a corner because I need to pounce on it because we need to give it some medicine. And I was like, all right. So I'm just like sitting there and he's doing all the fucking, come by, lay down, rah, rah. And he's like herding these sheep. And I'm like, fucking Tom, like, cause you're in straight lines, mate. This is unbelievable. Like, what's going on? Herds him into a corner, literally rugby tackles this sheep. And he's like, come on then, Luke, bring it over. And I'll bring the quad bike over, and he gets out the penicillin and gives it this fucking shot, sprays another X on its back, so he's had two doses. We go find the other ones. Awesome. I like came back for breakfast and I was like, I can't believe what's just happened. I thought I was coming up for rehearsal.
Once a week, dude. Nope. Every bloody day.
Every single day. That is not a job, that is fully aware of
life. Wow.
And it is inspiring.
Very much so.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Incredible.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you very, very much for doing this.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
No,
anytime.
I'm a fan and it's quite cathartic actually, just having an outlet to talk about Canterbury. I think I talk about Canterbury and the band a bit to people I meet anyway, because in this past life I did this, but not necessarily being asked direct questions about it, like in retrospect. So thanks,
one of my favourite British bands of all time ever.
Yeah.
Thank you, mate.
And people will listen to this. I implore you to go and listen to Canterbury. You'll be better for it.
They're
going to
be the next Coldplay.
You're going to be the next Coldplay. I'm fucking sticking by it. Yeah.
He's gonna find this tweet he did and he's gonna retweet it.
I'm gonna find it.
Gonna find it. You definitely. I'll just tweet it again. Yeah.
No, it's still happening. I'm telling you, they might have, but I haven't given up that they're going to be the next Coldplay. But yeah, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, mate.
So much.
Nice one, guys.
Thank you for the music and friendship and being a top chap.
You're very, very welcome. Yeah. Thank you. Cheers, guys. You're listening to
Sapping Podcast! Yes!
Wicked!
Luke from Canterbury. On Sapnin Podcast episode 55, thank you so much for taking time out and jumping in the back of Sean's car to have an emotional, deep and thoughtful conversation about your life, career and just lovely things, memories.
When you said jump in the back of Sean's car then for some deep and emotional, I was like, oh, he's been watching me, have you? And then I realised you were talking about the interview.
What the blackout and Canterbury got up to on tour stays on tour, and I will not have those stories on this podcast.
Okay, then.
Because we will get sued.
Yeah, I know. I was talking about all the dogging I do in this car.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Can you smell it? Anyway, thank you very much again to Luke for coming on. We had a lovely fucking chat. What a great gig. I genuinely urge you to go and see Tom Jenkins live if you can. Because the record's amazing, but live, it's something else.
It's beautiful.
It's something else. It's beautiful, it's haunting, it's magnificent, it's a sight to behold. So please go check out Tom Jenkins and Luke Preble in Tom Jenkins' band.
And it's literally a sight to behold because Luke's not bad in the eye.
Oh, Morgan's just come out again. Fair enough, Morg. Fair enough, bud. Yeah, no, you are right. He's a good looking chap.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
Okay, thank you very
much. Whoa. Yeah. Imagine. I can't even go into joking with you because you cut it out. Anyway.
First full episode all recorded in Sean's car.
100% car.
After this, right, that would have been the last 3 weeks of guests would have been ex-bassists from bands.
Accidental ex-bassists month. That's what we've done, is it?
Yeah.
Who do we have? We've had Dallin Weeks.
Dallin Weeks, formerly of Panic at the Disco, now of I Don't Know How But You Found Me. Then last week was the
Stuart Richardson.
Yes, formerly of Lost Prophets, now No Devotion and Thursday Fame. And of course, Luke.
Ex-Canterbury, now of Tom Jenkins fame. And Bass Fame.
Hmm.
Well, that was an accident we didn't mean.
Well.
Thank you very much if you've listened to Three Basses Talking. I know nobody really cares what basses have to say, but, you know.
They're
the best members we can get. I'm only joking. Thank you very much to all three of those chaps. We have literally had our minds blown lately with some of the comments and love being shown for previous episodes.
Yeah.
Especially the Stuart Richardson episode.
Yeah, it was very, very touching. So thank you for everyone who sent us a message. And if you haven't checked out those episodes, make sure you do an all 54 other episodes of Sapnin Podcast
yes.
available now on Apple Music, Spotify,
Acast and everywhere else that you can stream podcasts from.
Yes,
make sure you are subscribed where you can, like our stuff, comment on our Instagram and all that jazz. So yes, if you want to go and follow us at Sapnin Pod on Instagram and Twitter, how would you spell it, Sean?
At SAPPENINPOD, at SAPPENINPOD.
You can also check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes.
But before we go into that, we need a word of the week to let so you can let us know that you've reached this far.
Well, I enjoyed spending time with Luke in and out of the car, and we had a lot of banter.
Okay.
So I think it's only right we go for word of the week this week is banterbury.
Oh!
Canterbury, with a B in a Morgan style pun.
I like that.
That hasn't made me want to kill myself. I've gone for banterbury. So yeah, this week's word of the week, banterbury. Hashtag banterbury. Tag it. Let us know that you listen to this bollocks, because I can't believe anybody gets it, but some people do. So congratulations to you guys, and I'm sorry.
And we love you very, very much.
Yes.
Now, if you go to the description of this episode, there's loads of names. Loads and loads of names.
Not only is there a fancy description that you write out every week, which some people just probably blindly ignore more.
Do you know, I do take a lot of time to write this description. Yeah.
So guys, go check out Morgan's descriptions. Even if you just go back and read the other descriptions of the other podcast, because he put some bloody effort into them, but I don't know how many people see them.
Yeah, but there's a lot of names in there that we need to thank. So as a massive thank you to all those names in there. But we've got to give a massive shout out to the elite members of our Patreon as follows.
Yes, thank you very much to Dana Lasnova, Kylie Wheeler, Mitch Perry, Samantha Spray, John Price, Amadine Urbano, Emma Barber, Liam Connolly, Kelly Young, Nathan Croshaw, Paul Hirschfield, Kelly Ewan, Scarlett Charlton, Laura Mar Sanchez, Nessa Smith, Kate Puttock, Jenny Munster, Amy Campion, Emily Senegals, Lucy Diaz, Martina McManus, Caden Denoudston, Erin Howard, John and Emma, James Oakley, Kieran Lewis, Marty Jacobson, Mike Cunningham, Shani Meyer Boxel Anderson, Sharif Awad. Oh, he's messed about with his name. Sharif Awad did Dali Wali. That sounds right. I'm gonna have to spell this out because he might have made me look like a racist, because I'm not a racist and he's written his name. It's not only Awad. I know Sharif Awad Ali, right? He's written Awa O W A D I D I D A L L Wali. Sharif Awadidwali.
He's like, trumped you there.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much to Patrick Anthony Wakefield Newbury, Michael Engler. Thank you very much to Lydia Henderson, Livy Cropper, Kelly Cannon, Amy Thomas, Ricky McClurg, Scott Jones, Stuart McNaught, Jamie Bluer, Tony Michael, Jenny Robertson, Craig Harris, Jordan Burchard, Lawrence, no name, just Lawrence, Kate Stevenson, and last by no means least, thank you very much for joining to Ryan Woodman as well.
Yeah.
Sorry that took so long.
It was incredible.
Sorry. But yeah, thank you very much to those people. Your support doesn't go unnoticed.
Yes.
And we appreciate it very, very much. Thank you very much. If you're a new member of the Patreon, if you're an old member, if you've upgraded, downgraded, given up on us, just got started with us, thank you very much. We love you and we appreciate you massively.
We do. It all helps. And if you'd like to get your name read out on the podcast at the end of each episode, or other crazy bundles of joy that comes from our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin.
I've just had this thought, right? If I was a brand,
yeah,
you only have to pay whatever that is for that tier, and then you get a mention every week on the podcast. So if you're a brand, just
yeah,
for a month, you get four technically adverts on a...
And especially if your brand's got a cool name, because then people will be like, oh, what's that? I'll check that out.
Yeah. Genius. Oh, get involved in here, yeah. Brandy Knobs.
Cool.
Yeah, that's it.
This has been Sapnin Podcast, episode 55, from Sean's car.
Yes.
Do you have any final words of this week's episode? It's been a nice one. It's been very touching. I've enjoyed it.
When I make the graphic, I write my Sapnin Podcast instead.
But no one's going to get that until they listen.
Well, yeah, the bastards will have to listen. I don't want people just to see the graphic and go, oh yeah, I can imagine what that conversation's about.
No,
listen to it, no.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
To Luke. Thank you very much to Tom Jenkins, yes, for having us. Thank you very much to Morgan.
Oh.
Thank you very much to myself. What a guy. That's it. Cool. cool. This is the end of the podcast in cars. Wait, you look like you're about to say something.
I just realised I haven't mentioned this. You know when we said about how good Canterbury and everything are?
Yeah.
That is correct. But also, go and check out their albums, because they are very very good.
Yes.
Dark Days is superb. Heavy in the Day. Oh my God, there is. Well, I don't want to go on, but we had an argument earlier about what the term bangers, right? That album, you have to agree with me, is full of bangers.
I can't go into this now, but bangers mean something completely different to me, and I don't mean sausages, I just mean club bangers.
It's got loads of good songs, yeah?
It's got great songs, absolutely. My album 2015, you cheeky shit. You're making me out to sound like I don't like Canterbury.
No, I don't.
I love Canterbury! More new! Do you want a Canterbury fight? Let's go up there, right? Or we'll sing Canterbury. Basically, we're on top of a car park right now, right? Out in the rain. Me and you, go up there, we'll just shout Canterbury lyrics till one of us dies.
I'm game for this.
Yu-Gi-Oh type.
What?
I don't know.
Oh, thanks for listening. Saiyan.
Yeah, thanks.
We'll see you next Friday.
Oh, good luck, everyone. Stay alive. Please never die. Sapman! Fucking hell.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.